And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. It is whatever time you're choosing to listen to this. It's week three of Film Fracas, and we are coming at you hot, loud, whatever, something, 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 something.
Are we that loud?
No, we're not that loud.
We're hot.
This is...
I hope people listen to this podcast at 4:30 in the morning. That's when I envision.
That would be nice. Anyway, this is Brett the Rock Johnson
like
coming
at you.
Like an
early morning cup of coffee or like a late night?
Both.
With me, as always, are Carter, the main... No, you're the whole effing show, Spillards.
I am the whole fucking show.
No, you're the whole effing show. And Robbie, the main man, DeShazer. How you
That's
guys doing?
That's right. No profanity here from me.
Thank you, Robbie. This is a family podcast.
I was gone for a week, and I actually saw my grandmother.
Wow.
And she...
She took the curse words out of you like Ursula.
No, I was going to say, she said she listened to the podcast, but she was like, you should tell that one guy to stop cursing so much. And I was like, which one? We all talk like sailors on the podcast.
We all do talk quite a bit in the profane
Some more way. Than others.
Wow.
But anyway, last week, we talked about world building, L.A. Confidential got the boots, sorry to say. This week, we're going to be talking about scores, as is tradition with our final four movies. Robbie, what do we got?
We have 1988's Bull Durham, 1988's Akira. What year is Scott Pilgrim?
2011, 12?
2010.
10.
2010, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
I'll have you know that it's 2010.
1993's Jurassic Park.
I love that movie.
Well, they're all good movies.
They're all good movies.
They are good movies.
So, if you guys have been listening to the podcast...
Very different soundtracks.
Too. Yes.
Very, very different soundtracks.
Except for some reason, the Scott Pilgrim one sounded exactly like the Jurassic Park, though I could have accidentally put it on repeat when I was listening. I don't know.
I don't know how you could have realized you weren't listening to Scott Pilgrim.
I don't know.
Listened to two albums for that, and they're both long.
Mm-hmm. They're also both good.
They're both good. I won't get into that, but they're... To clear that up, we listened to both the original score and the soundtrack with, you know,
yes,
all your songs with Beck and Metric.
Ramon.
But, yeah, it's a traditional Final Four music episode. I don't know what I can say.
Yes.
Yes.
We've got four very different soundtracks, which is nice because I feel like the last two times we've had... Very similar,
yes.
Or some, you know.
These are definitely different.
Yeah. So it'll be.
Yeah, with Disney, we had two scores done by the same people.
Yes.
So. That's true. That was tricky.
Yeah.
This time, however, all very different.
All very different. Yes.
All very different styles of soundtracks.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Definitely.
So
let's hop in.
Let's dive right in.
Do we wanna start with the big one?
In what way?
In
that it's a major iconic movie,
yes.
And that it's long,
yes.
And that it's very different from the rest of them, or in that the tracks are often 10 minutes long.
Why don't you just say it?
I've lost both of you. Or we could go
say
alphabetically.
It. Speak the name.
Jurassic Park?
Yes.
We're starting with Jurassic Park. Because...
Okay.
These are all big in their own
yes.
ways.
Like, I think it's important. I think it's important to kind of, as we normally do, set aside the fact that
status.
It is iconic.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you can also consider that it's iconic for a reason, in that it is probably of a good quality.
For sure, for sure.
Because like, not every score in 1993 became an iconic score.
That's very true.
Yes.
But yes.
But you can't be like, oh, like, so
it's
since
better
it's so iconic,
yeah.
It makes it better than
yeah,
these
no.
movies. Yeah, it'd be
but
like...
But it obviously has some kind of merit
like,
because
yeah.
it is an iconic score.
Yeah.
Anywho, let's jump in. I quite enjoy the score. It's actually... The Jurassic Park theme is my favorite of John Williams' themes, actually. Fun fact. I think
yeah,
this
that's,
one...
That's is probably definitely up there.
As we talk about... scores, usually it's about establishing a mood and a tone for the movie, and I think Jurassic Park does that excellently. I think in the, you know, in the getting to the park, you have kind of the whimsical music and like the walking around and like, oh, discovery. And then when he sees, you know, the Stegosaurus and it's the sweeping theme and you're like a sense of wonder and bewilderment and it kind of fills you with it. And then even in the tense situations, you've got the tension.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the like the percussive instruments give it that kind of like rough nature feel kind
for
of
sure,
thing.
For sure.
So I think it's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's really good. I love it. Yeah, the Jurassic Park theme is definitely probably one of my favorite John Williams themes.
It's a fantastic theme.
Like, yeah. And listening to it, I've realized I've never actually just listened to the Jurassic Park score mm-hmm. before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it'd be interesting if I could, like, erase Jurassic Park from my mind and just listen to the score and see if I could, like, get the theme in the mood. Mm-hmm. Because, like, since I have seen Jurassic Park so much when like, we even watched it together a couple months back, I could tell exactly, like, what was going on when
mm-hmm.
I heard what was happening. But I also felt, like, really conflicted at times because there were some moments where, like, as when we kind of talked about it last season when we were talking about the Pirates score.
Mm-hmm. This is absolutely what I was going to bring up as
and
well.
And how, like...
They do bring the theme in a lot.
There's three motifs in this the score. There's
like, I was going to say, like, they... Like, they use the theme a lot, but they don't use it, like, overly much, which I really like because I'm like, okay, like, this is our main theme.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. But there was so much more that happened. But also on, like, the other hand, like, again, like we talked with blanking on those Disney composers for Beauty and the Beast and... Macon and Ashman, how, like, how you listen to a lot of scores mm-hmm. by the same composer, you can kind of, like, they kind of like blend together after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were moments where I was kind of like, yep, this is a John Williams score, all right. Mm-hmm. But I was also like it sounds generic and it sounds kind of the same, but I'm really into it and I really like it. And so I was like, I found myself being like, I feel like conflicted is too strong a word, but I was kind of like, okay, like this sounds generic, but oh, hey, this is really good. Okay, that's John Williams doing like action suspense, but hey, this other thing's really good. And so like, I did really like it. It was mm-hmm. just kind of like, at times I was like, yep, that's definitely John Williams, but I was mm-hmm. like, but it's Jurassic Park, and
that's not a bad thing.
Like, no, yeah, exactly. Like that's why I'm like, I feel like mm-hmm. conflicted is too strong a word.
Yeah.
I was just kind of like, there were a couple of moments where it was kind of like, okay, it's John Williams, mm-hmm. but then like in the long run, overall, I did really appreciate how it wasn't just kind of like, oh, here's the Jurassic Park theme again. Like, I really liked how the theme like really definitely like bookended it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I get what you're saying, and maybe this is just, you know, different takes from different people on the same, you know. I don't like it as much because it reuses the Jurassic Park theme a lot. I feel like I love the Jurassic Park theme. It has its icon status, and for a good reason. But between that and the Journey to the Island mm-hmm. theme that kind of plays, I don't know. I just felt like, in a similar way to Pirates of the Caribbean that we talked about last season, it just felt like it was a lot of stuff that was connecting and kind of meant to underscore the, you know, moments of dialogue to follow it up with, you know, whether it was a tender moment playing the Jurassic Park theme underneath it, or if it's a little more fanfaric playing the journey, mm-hmm. The Journey to the Island, a very high, mm-hmm. You know. And so it could totally be something that just in this listen through, it just bothered me because I was trying to think about it mm-hmm. like that and see if there was anything that I noticed, but it was something that just like, I got through it, and I was like, yeah, I don't remember much other than the three main motifs. There's, mm-hmm. you know, the music that's playing whenever there's a T-Rex or a raptor that's very similar to, like, the Jaws theme or something, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I would argue that it almost doesn't need more than just a couple of motifs. Because there are some movies that are, like, large ensemble pieces where you would expect either certain characters to have their own themes or certain things like that. But this, I think... To have, you know, your fanfare, and then your stressful scene, and then your kind of whimsy at the beginning. I don't know that it necessarily needed more than that, because those are the emotions that the movie itself is trying to evoke.
For sure. And it does, it's not, I don't want to say it's as bad as...
Yeah, I would agree Pirates of the Caribbean is a worse offender of that than Jurassic Park.
Because it's really, you know, it's one theme that is played over and over again. And at least there's a variation.
Yeah.
And even these, you know, pirates, like we said, often is the exact same, you know, bum, bum. This at least has some variations on it.
Yeah, that's why I appreciated it a lot.
Like the piano version of the theme. So
it's a very classic score. It's like what most classic movie scores are like, where they had one big theme and that was their selling point, and then they did like variations on it.
And so, like I said, I don't know if it's that big of a deal, but it was something that turned me off personally. That could just be this time listening through it, you know, another time in a different mood on a different day. It could be. I could totally be like, oh, I love it.
I will say the only part where I wasn't like really feeling it was I think it was the second to last track where it's like the T-Rex fighting the raptors or something. Because those last two tracks are like the longest and they're only like 6 minutes or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when the rest of the soundtrack's like 2-3 minute tracks. I remember...
Except for Journey to the Island, which is like 8-9 minutes long.
It didn't feel that long.
It didn't feel that. I'm just looking at the...
Oh, okay. Then that also helps go into what I was about to say. Like, that's 8 or 9 minutes long. It didn't feel like that, but the like T-Rex Raptor one, by the last like minute, I was like, okay, this is loud. Let's move it along. I was like, oh, this is only 6 minutes, but this feels a lot longer. But there's the rest of that score I feel is so solid that I forgive it a little more. The good outweighs the... Again, bad sounds like too strong of a word.
What I think definitely is a point for there, and like, I don't know how much we want to consider how well the score matches to the visuals. That's a very intense...
That's much more the score going with the visual.
Yeah. That's where watching them separately, I guess, kind of might be like a tick against it, but again, there's more ticks for it.
But what I will say, and I meant to mention it last time, because there's so many themes reused, I don't know if there's as many moments where I'm like, oh, that's the exact time when this happens, or that's, you know, because there's so much, and so, like, it's nice because of the John Williams score, and every track is essentially labeled what's going on when, you know, Dennis steals the embryo is when Dennis steals the embryo. Although this is not the worst offender of a John Williams score in doing that track listing that lists out the entire plot of the film.
What, you're talking about Qui-Gon's Noble End?
Yeah.
You're talking about Chrome Dome?
Qui-Gon's Noble End was the one I was thinking of, though.
He does say, buckle up, Chrome Dome.
Yeah, I know.
So there's...
Well, I like that. I really appreciate it.
But yeah, so sometimes there's issues with... I don't know, is that a John Williams thing or is that just a studio thing?
I think that's a him thing. Because Michael Giacchino does puns for all of his track lists.
Yeah.
I've never noticed that. Yes. Now that I'm thinking of it...
Every single one is a pun in all of his albums.
Now that I think about it, I hadn't like looked into it that much.
Except for, I think, Mission Impossible might not be. And Lost, I don't think is.
But there you go. Those are my kind of takes. There's, you know, the motifs that kind of, you know, make it.
They're just a little tired for you.
Yeah, they're a little tired. And it may just be, you know,
20
plus years after the movie came out.
You've heard it so many times, too.
Yeah. No. And I was also just in Universal Studios in Orlando.
And you hear it on loop.
Yeah, they play Journey to the Island on loop. And
Okay, so that... Yeah, I see where you're coming from on that.
Which is exactly what I'm saying. Like, I totally agree with your points, but I'm also like, in this last listen, I wasn't a fan of that. But I could just be tired of it.
Yeah,
I just remember hearing like Journey to the Island. I'm like, oh, there's the theme. There it is again. Is this a pirate situation? Then listening to the rest of it, I was like, no, this was not a pirate situation.
It has its ebbs and flows.
Like, yeah, nice.
But I will praise stuff like the raptor attack. Like I do. There's the two other themes, but I really do like the carnivorous dinosaur kind of motif that he did.
Yeah.
Because that does feel suspenseful, and that accomplishes a similar thing to, like I said, Jaws does. Yeah. I like it a lot. It's a good score. It sits kind of in the middle, maybe because it's so classic and not doing maybe some inventive stuff that other scores in this list might do.
All right. What do we want to talk about next?
We'll just go backwards on my tabs on my computer. Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
I'm going to preface this by saying I don't know that I have anything bad to say about this.
Oh, I love this score.
Because, one, I think the score is excellent. I think it captures the tone of the movie. I think it captures the feel and everything. It sets the mood. I think the soundtrack is spectacular. I don't know that there's a single track on it that wouldn't belong in this movie. That's what I have to say. I loved it. I don't know that I actually have a negative.
Yeah. What would I say about this score? I was prepared because when I first saw Scott Pilgrim vs. the World way back when, I don't remember when I actually saw it, but I downloaded the Universal theme from the beginning for, I was doing some kind of video for a school project or something and that was really all of my exposure to the Nigel Godrich part of the, I listened to, you know, the whole soundtrack, but I, you know, didn't think of the fact that there's the Blue score soundtrack. And so going into this, I was like, is this all going to be like the universe? Is it all going to be just 8-bit music? Because, and I was prepared to have this critique of, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm not a fan of 8-bit, but I know this kind of started a lot of like that craze over it and stuff, and, you know, in the early 2010s. But it really isn't a lot of that, and it was a worry of mine.
Yeah, it's not. It's again, it's used efficiently.
Yes.
Sparingly and appropriately.
Yes.
Less is more.
I will say that when I was sitting in the theater watching a movie for the first time, as soon as the Universal logo comes up with the 8-bit theme, I was like, I'm going to love this movie. And sure enough, I did.
Oh, I also loved it when I first saw it, and then the 8-bit thing got tired pretty quickly.
Yes.
And
yes.
YouTube then remember, 8-bit covers then, of then songs.
Remember everything had to be an 8-bit game.
Oh, God. There was just a weird, you know, 8-bit, 16-bit time in
it's like, pop culture. Game of Thrones is an 8-bit game.
It's like, like, no.
No. Stop.
Please. Don't do this.
But no, there's some really good... And I mean, really quickly, I figured out it wasn't that. The Universal theme plays, and then it's Hillcrest Park, which is very drawn out, and lots of synth pads, and it does a very good job.
Yeah.
What's everyone's favorite song from the soundtrack?
From the soundtrack? Mine is Black Sheep, actually. That's always been on one of my regular rotations and playlists.
That's pretty good. I'm going to give a quick disclaimer. I did listen to the whole score, but I wasn't able to listen through the entire soundtrack. I did listen to at least like the first minute of each thing on the soundtrack, so I feel like I have...
You listened to a whole minute of I Am So Sad, So Very, Very Sad?
No, I listened to all of I Am So Sad, I'm So Very, Very Sad.
This song's called I'm So Sad, So Very, Very Sad. So sad!
It's not a race, guy.
This next one's called... next one goes out to the guy in the balcony. It's called We Hate You, Please Die.
Oh, sweet. Song for me.
But Crash and the Boys is the best band.
No, it's that one band with Crash and the Boys.
The Boys.
Is that girl a boy, too?
She is. She just flips off.
But, yeah, I don't really know. I remember the only real, like, negative thing I could say about the soundtrack is just, is it Oh Katrina? Or it's just them shouting Oh Katrina over and over again? I wasn't too into that, but I think that might be a taste thing.
Yeah.
But other than that, like... Oh, yeah, like, I loved the entire score just because, like, this movie is just, like, a video game, comic book come to life, and every track of the score really, like, feels like it could just be a level in a video game or the track that plays during a boss fight. Like, like the Roxy track. I remember listening to that, and I was kind of like, oh, yeah, I can totally see, like, running around the arena, the boss is coming after you, and you got to go in there and attack him and get out and all that. And I just, like you said, just, like, this perfectly, I felt like this more than Jurassic Park. Yeah. Like, perfectly captures, like, the mood and atmosphere and aesthetic of the movie.
To me, what could have been detrimental was if you're listening to it and all of a sudden they're listening to a song or something and you're like, this doesn't sound like this movie. And you never have that. Like, even the Katrina song, you're like, I mean, yeah. It's, no, it could still be in the movie.
Like, yeah, nothing. That's the thing. It's kind of like, okay, like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I don't feel this one as much, but, like, yeah, they all feel like.
Yeah,
like,
they all feel like they belong.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
There's not a track in it that isn't like.
It's like, oh, I'm this, like, I can picture this. I can picture
this
where.
This in the Scott Pilgrim movie.
I don't know where exactly O Katrina happens mm-hmm. in the movie. I'm kind of like, I have my ideas about where this could be, but.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But, yeah, like, it. Yeah,
it doesn't feel out of place. It's just not your favorite.
Right, that's what I was trying to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely some really cool stuff in this. I mean, I'm always gonna be a fan of Slick. S L Ick.
I love that. Yes, I did like the like intercuts of like the dialogue in mm-hmm, some of the tracks, mm-hmm. like the Lucas Lee fight. How it's just at the very end, it just like builds up. And it's just like get me aboard. And I was like, oh, that. Was... It was just, like, the perfect way to just, like, punctuate mm-hmm. and end that track. And I was like, damn.
Oh, which one? The vegan. Mm-hmm. You listen to it, and you can definitely almost feel the moment where he lifts Scott up with his...
Your hair.
What was the one? I think it was Rumble or Fight, where, like, it pauses for, like, 2 seconds. And then it goes crazy. And I was like, yeah, that's this movie. That. Mm-hmm. It's very, very well done. It's, I'm a big fan. I don't know what else I can say about this.
Quite good. I think we covered a lot of it, unless anyone has anything
major
they want to. This one's pretty solid.
Pretty solid.
I don't really.
I mean, if you haven't listened to at least the soundtrack, and you are a fan of the Baby Driver soundtrack.
Yes.
There's some crossover in
artists. Edgar Wright has
T-Rexes on both of those.
Best taste in music.
Also Beck's on both of those. That's true. Beck is a huge collaborator in both of these. And I personally am a big fan of Beck. So I can...
Hey, Beck, come on the podcast.
Beck, come on the podcast, you know.
Do we want Beck on this podcast?
I'd be fine with it. Seems.
What about Moby?
I don't know if I want Moby. Moby's like chaotic, evil Beck.
I know.
Beck is a true neutral.
Hey, Moby, come on the podcast too.
Defend yourself.
We'll get Moby and Beck together. Cool. And we'll talk about something that neither of them are involved
in. We can finally prove that they are not the same person.
That's true. Was that in any doubt?
One's a vegan, one's a Scientologist.
I don't know.
That's true.
I've never seen them in the same place at the same time. So as far as I'm concerned, Beck and Moby are the same person.
They do both rock the one name.
Just like Key and Peele. Never seen them together.
You absolutely... Have you seen an episode of the show?
They're
Key
quite
and Peele
frequently
are the
together.
Same person.
They did a movie. It was called Keanu.
No, that was a cat.
But
not
they were
people.
They were both in...
Robbie, cats aren't people.
What? But...
Anyway, moving
steel
on.
Steel is heavier than
future,
feathers.
Future film fracas film, possibly. Keanu.
I'm going to say no.
Keanu Reeves, come on the podcast.
That too, Keanu Reeves, feel free to stop by.
I said it before that I don't like the fight between the Katayanagi twins and mm-hmm. Sex Bomb Mom, but the music.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like,
so the music, what the fight is.
Yes, it's not my favorite. It's probably my least favorite fight in the movie,
yeah.
but...
Yeah.
That
it's one of the best tracks.
It's
one of my favorite tracks.
I liked the end to was it the one that had the fight between Todd and Scott, where it just ended with like the you headbutted him so hard he burst.
Oh yeah, the
yes.
goodbye. I guess.
Yeah. Sorry. I guess.
Sorry. I guess.
That's how. But it ended with that. So that's
yeah.
the point for that.
Yeah.
Has anyone listened, just because I'm sitting here looking at the track list, has anyone listened to the original video game soundtrack?
Nope.
I have not, no.
Okay.
Well, moving on.
I've also never played the video game. I should.
The video game's fun.
I heard.
Shall we talk about
Bull Durham?
Sure.
Okay.
This
is our other soundtrack, which there is a score in there, but I don't think they ever released it.
No, there's a vinyl release that is very, very hard to find.
Yeah. So there was technically a score in this movie, but all we could find was the soundtrack. So.
Yes, which may hurt Bull Durham.
We'll see.
And I couldn't find two of the tracks on the soundtrack.
I'm willing to bet they were jazzy.
Was I think it was Tenderness. It was like, give me some, try a little Tenderness. Something like that. And what was the other one? What was the other one? One by Pat McLaughlin. I don't know. But.
Oh, Try a Little Tenderness by Dr. John and Benny Wallace?
Yes. Yeah.
Try a Little Tenderness is a very common song. Like, it's been covered by, like.
Yeah, Otis Redding. I could find a lot of it covers, but I couldn't find the original Benny Wallace. One,
yeah.
It was the same with. God, whatever that other one was.
When a Woman Loves a Man, the joke. You couldn't find
the
Joe Cocker?
No, I found Woman Loves. When a Woman Loves a Man.
Not When a Man Loves a Woman.
No.
Whatever.
Which is what Spotify really wanted me to listen to. It came up with like four of those, and I was like, no, not this one.
Yeah.
I know that song.
I'm going to see if I can
find, but I will tell you, songs that, in the soundtrack that I think really. Because what we were talking about with Jurassic Park was how well this music that John Williams composed for the movie fit the tone and set, it defined kind of the setting and the place. And the three that do that for me are Can't Tear It Up Enough by the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and his Comets, and 60 Minute Man by the Dominicans.
Yes.
Those three, which are all, I believe, all baseball field scenes in the movie.
Yes.
Or 60 Minute Man might be baseball scenes mixed with, not Crash, Nuke going home to Annie and stuff like
that. Yeah.
But.
I believe it's in a montage.
Yeah. All three of them are very much montage.
Yeah.
Because I believe Rock Around the Clock is Nuke getting good at pitching or something.
Yes. Something like that.
Of the soundtracks, this was one of the ones I was worried about because of, you know, just how different it is and how, you know, there's stuff about these songs were obviously picked for a reason, but, like, how do you really talk about them
when they're
previously existing songs? It's the one I think I had the most fun listening to, and it was because of those three tracks, for sure. Just Can't Tear It Up Enough is a fun driving song. I was listening to it in the car, like, it's, it's rowdy for, you know, a song written years before the movie even came out.
Well, and we knew we were going to run into this eventually because there were a lot of movies, especially in the 80s and 90s, where it was very popular to have the accompanying soundtrack. I'm looking at you, Top Gun. Has an excellent soundtrack, one of my favorites of any movie ever.
It's pretty good.
I love
the iconic stuff from Top Gun. I will say the iconic stuff from Top Gun was written for Top Gun.
That's true.
Berlin's Take My Breath Away and Danger Zone are both original.
Let me some Kenny Loggins.
The other track I was thinking I couldn't find was You Done Me Wrong by Pat McLaughlin.
I don't even know if that's even listed officially on IMDb, so. Oh, no, it is. I found it.
Because I found in Amazon, they were selling the soundtrack on Amazon, so I was looking at the track listing on that, which does not have Rock Around the Clock or 60 Minute Man.
Really?
They are in the movie, though.
They are definitely in the movie.
Yeah, I remember that, so I was kind of like, okay. But I love Rock Around the Clock on its own. So I know that. And I think I vaguely remember hearing 60 Minute Man during the big Deadpool sex montage.
Yes.
Yes, also.
Sure.
Another place you can see
that.
That's
when it happened.
No, you're right.
In this movie.
Yes, you just died.
That is what 60 Minute Man is about.
Yeah.
Yep.
It plays. Is it the only one that plays twice in the movie? Because I also feel like it's a.
Well, if it plays twice.
I only heard it once.
Yeah, you might
remember
it
during the montage. I don't remember what else it comes back on. Anywho,
so Can't Tear It Up Enough.
I agree with you.
Clock or the baseball montage.
Those are three of the top songs. I agree.
I Can Tina Turner song, which is just stained by there.
Yeah, I also agree that there's definitely. This one, like you said, is kind of already. Like hitting with a handicap a little bit. I think this is definitely a great showcase of like period and like when the film is made. Like it's definitely a late 80s based on the soundtrack. I think what you said was right, that those three tracks definitely encapsulate the movie and the part of the movie they're shown in. Mm-hmm. I think not all of them do that.
Not all of them do it as well.
And I think there's a lot of, like, there were a lot of songs that just kind of blended together for me, where I was kind of like, ah, yes, jazz. Yeah. I love it.
Center Field is definitely one like that I got tired of
Center Field. They kind of, a lot of them kind of blend together, but I do quite enjoy 60 Minute Man and Rock Around the Clock. I think those are two excellent, excellent songs, and I think they're used quite expertly.
The two Edith Piaf songs actually very well encompass Susan Sarandon's character.
Yes.
So I give those points. And this was one that, like I said, I worry about it because it is kind of batting with a handicap for not, you know, having an available score for us to listen to.
Yeah.
I don't really think it's doing that poorly though, compared to, you know, there's,
I'm not saying it's not disregarded, but I don't know that it's not quite as complete a picture, I think, as it could be.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely got, like, whereas, because with Scott Pilgrim also had a soundtrack, right? And if you were to only listen to that soundtrack, like I said, I don't think there's a single track in there that you would ever doubt that it was Scott Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily know that you could say the same about Bull Durham.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. And so, like, I was trying to think of, like, how could I talk about Bull Durham? And, like, we're talking, like, we talk about this every time we talk about music, but, like, separating the music from the movie, and there were a lot of tracks, so I was kind of like, I don't remember where this was in the movie. Like, some tracks I was like, I don't doubt this was in the movie, because, like, this sounds like the Can't Tear It Up Enough, like, which I did very much enjoy. I was like, oh, I like this song. I think I know where this goes in the movie, but which one was it? I think it was like Born to Be Bad or Got Loaded. I was kind of like, this sounds like it could be something just from any late 80s movie. I don't know where this would be in the movie. I don't remember hearing this in the movie. And so that was like, I've been having a hard time thinking about, like, how to talk about it or, like, what I could say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, it definitely is handicapped a lot. And, like, with Scott Pilgrim, like Carter just said, like, each one of those, everything on the soundtrack fits in, like, you don't doubt that any of those could be in the movie, but there also is an original score that, well, we did say there was a score for this movie, but without having listening to it.
Well, also you have to consider the fact that, I mean, we've all seen the movie at least once. You've only seen it once, right?
Bull Durham, yes.
Yeah, Robbie and I have seen it multiple times, and I don't know that I could tell you a particular anything from the score.
For sure, yeah.
And, like,
but I will say, in Scott Pilgrim's, a lot of those songs are still original to them. Like,
that's true.
There's a good number that are original to that movie. Like, that's Black true. Sheep, which we praised as a being, is written by Beck for Scott Pilgrim.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ramona is written by Beck for
Scott Pilgrim. That's definitely true. So there's a lot of stuff in there. So you have to also take that into account.
Yeah. Like, O Katrina was chosen separately, I heard Ramona sing and stuff like that, but, like, they're, you know, We Are Sex Bob-omb is a...
Obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, then I think that definitely helps more for Scott Pilgrim's case then. But, yeah, I'm not really sure how to really talk about
the Bull Durham. I'm just saying they're not perfect analogs.
No. I wasn't saying
they were perfect.
It just as a closest comparison. Yeah. It's the only other film with a soundtrack.
It's the hardest one to talk about, for sure. Because,
which we will eventually get into if you do more like that. I'm glad you did not pick No Country for Old Men this season, as it does not have a score or a soundtrack.
No, it doesn't.
And that would have suffered in this category.
Other than Mary Poppins last season, we've still yet to run into something where a movie didn't have something to fit into our category.
Yeah.
So, luckily, we haven't done that yet.
And then, like, the Rock Around the Clock, like, I love that song. I want that song played at my wedding when I ever get married. But it's like...
Are you proposing right now, Brett?
No.
To me?
No. We haven't been going steady, Robbie. I'm not some kind of floozy.
Where is this going?
But, like, I don't know.
Harlot.
Give me... I'm gonna cut out a scarlet A and plaster on your forehead. Anywho...
How did this go from a joke like, about me and Brett going steady to me being slut shamed on the podcast?
I don't know. I think this is actually a backdoor pilot to our book fracas.
Monthly
book club podcast.
Oh no!
The first book is The Scarlet Letter.
Oh, it's high school English all over.
Everyone, take out your copies.
I'm having PTSD flashbacks. Don't do this to me.
Scarlet Letter's not bad.
Yeah, whatever.
That's not the movie to talk.
No, stop it. We're not talking about the Scarlet Letter right now.
No, we're talking about Easy A.
No. Okay. God damn. I forgot what I was talking about.
I'm sorry.
God.
You want Rock Around the Clock played at your wedding.
Oh, and I was kind of like, oh, like, I love Rock Around the Clock. And I'm kind of like, it's like, I love that song, and that was in Bull Durham, but I don't know how to, like, equate that to being like, oh, yeah, Bull Durham has a good soundtrack. It's like, or is it just, no, I really like this song separate from Bull Durham, or like.
Basically, I don't know how to talk.
And it was used in a good place. It was, like, used very well.
Then I'd say that's good. That's how, because I would say if you're watching the movie and all of a sudden there's a song that's distracting or jarring, and you're like, that shouldn't be there, I'd say that's like
a
knock.
And it's not used for some kind of comedic effect.
Yeah, and I would say that's probably a knock. That song should have been either picked as a different song or not used there.
For example, it's jarring when Careless Whisper is used in Deadpool. But it's used for comedic effect, so it's a good pick.
So it's fine.
There's not anything like that.
But then if you're listening to it separately, and you're like, you listen to a song, and you think to yourself, well, this doesn't conjure up any memory of the movie, or it's just very generic, then I would say it's probably not a good thing. Because the movie should at least equate the song or feeling of the song with a scene or feeling in the movie.
For sure.
And if it doesn't do that, if you're really like, this just sounds generic, or I have no idea when they played this, or I don't see how this is related, then that's definitely not a well-curated soundtrack.
Yeah. Which,
I was having some of that listening to the soundtrack, where it was just like, oh, these definitely are songs from the 80s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. I ragged on Center Field earlier for being a little bit generic or something.
It's good, though.
But I listened to it, and I definitely know when it's played.
There's definitely not a song in here I didn't like.
Yeah.
Like, personally.
It's just, yeah.
It's a little bit trickier.
It's just a hard one to talk about.
Akira?
Yeah, let's just move on to Akira.
Okay.
All right.
Let's talk about Akira.
I'm going to get my feelings about this score right out of the way.
Uh-oh.
I love it. But also...
God, I hate us.
Anywho, no, I absolutely love this score. I think it's fantastic. I think it's epic. And there are not that many scores that you can describe truly as epic. But this one, I think, gets that. I think this one, there are definitely certain tracks that do an excellent job at capturing. Like, I will say the score as a whole captures the feel of the movie, the tone of the movie, just like a good score should. So it, you know, passes that benchmark. There's definitely like songs where I'm listening to it and I'm like, this is them on the motorcycle, or like this is them in a chase, or this is them in a fight, or at the end you're listening to like Requiem, or almost at the end you're like, oh, this is everything all at once. And it's excellent. I will say that some of these tracks run a little long.
Yes.
I do think, not that it's like any of the tracks are like, or themes are like overused, but I will say like in the individual tracks, like there's a lot of like quiet and then choir.
Yeah.
And then quiet. And then choir! And it's that for like 15 minutes. And I'm like, I like this. I don't know if I like this constantly for 15 minutes, but I do like this.
Because I know the longest tracks are Tetsuo, which is 10 plus minutes, which is
Illusion
and Requiem are the three longest tracks.
Yeah.
And with Illusion, I'm not into the whole... Here's a sustained whistle with wood blocks.
Yes, there's a lot of whistling in wood blocks. I did not love that.
But I was like, perfectly fits with the movie, and I know where it happens, and I was kind of like, okay, I'm seeing Akira in my head, but I'm like, I don't need 10 plus minutes of this, but it fits.
This is a case where I recognize how well the score is made and how well it fits the movie, but I personally do not necessarily enjoy all the tracks. Yeah.
I love the Tetsuo track just because of how different it is from the rest of the soundtrack and a lot of other soundtracks out there with the glasses and everything. It's just how it just builds up and sustains, and it just kind of goes a little silent and it's just da 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 da.
And it's just at the 4 minute mark.
Yeah.
And then, something where it's because it cuts and then it's just like
yeah. And I'm it's epic. And then if it wasn't for the Tetsuo track, I wouldn't enjoy the Requiem track as much as I do, because that is just a total manipulation and deconstruction of the Tetsuo theme and putting that in this horrible body horror way. And it's this is everything. This is Tetsuo's ultimate final moments. And Requiem. Akiwa. Marriage. But, I give...
Tetsuo!
Kaneda! But, I give... I think it works for Requiem being 14 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I also just love how, all the tracks sound so different from each other, but, they all fit.
Yes.
And listening to the first track gets me every single time, just hearing, the thunder and lightning, and just the...
Yes.
Every time I hear that... Every time I hear that, I'm just kind of like, God, I love this movie so much. Wait, why am I surprised by that?
Yes.
I know how much I love this movie.
So, paused I was going to say I dislike it. I love the soundtrack.
He also hates it.
This soundtrack, I was surprised at how much, just listening to it without the visuals and stuff, how amazing it is. And it's got... I totally understand why you love it, Brett, because it sounds like stuff you...
It's very layered.
Yes, it's very layered. Just like there's the a movie. Lot of low drones and stuff like that that you're... But Battle Against Clown is it's got visceral noises to it, and you're... And I was listening to it in these headphones that I'm wearing, and they're, good surround sound, good noise cancellation. And this soundtrack is abrasive, is the word I kept coming back to when I was thinking. It's abrasive, it's raw, it doesn't always worry about melody as much as it does just about, emotion, using sound to create sound, emotion. Yeah. The track Mutation is fantastic, because the track gets more abrasive and mutated as the mutation in the movie happens. Exodus from the Underground Fortress is exactly
yes.
There's so much to listen to. It's also good. What's the Dolls song?
The Dolls Prophecy. One that's just
That's the one I remember. Absolutely remember from the movie. It's very evident when you listen. Yeah. Well, because listening to it, you're seeing it in the movie, you're like, is that a sound effect or is that mute? And you're like, oh, it's kind of both.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's so good. It's just... I told the guys this before we started recording, but it's one of those... This soundtrack got me so hyped and I love it just so much that I've put in... on eBay, because the Mondo release of the soundtrack on vinyl is sold out. I'm trying to find a copy of it on eBay. And I need this guy to respond to me and accept my bid or ask for more money. And it hasn't happened yet. But it's so good. And it's got elements of noise music to it that I wasn't expecting for a soundtrack from, 1988, because there's still, as much as, I view this as a complete piece, there's a part of me in my head that's it's an anime, because anime, my first exposure to anime was, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Dragon Ball Z and stuff, and so there's a part of me that still, even though it's, you know, a rated R film, obviously aimed at adults, that I'm like, I don't know, I love it. Mm-hmm. And I forget how, because this, you know, if this was meant for kids, it would not be as abrasive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
I love it.
Does anyone have anything else to say?
I don't mind that the tracks are so long at times.
I don't mind that they're so long either. It's more that I just get a little bit tired of it.
Yeah.
After a certain point, I'm just kind of like, all right.
I get the gist of it. I know what's happening. We can move on.
What I would say about that, yeah, they're long, but maybe they weren't necessarily meant to be, you know, like a lot of film scores that have long tracks. You're like, this wasn't really meant for me to sit down and listen to. This was meant for
to be watched
a
in
long
tandem.
Stretch.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you go back and watch the movie, you'll find that, like, a lot of the tracks aren't, like, they don't use the whole track in the movie. Like, like Winds Over Neo Tokyo, that plays once in the entire movie, and they only use, like, 15 seconds of it while Tetsuo was talking to his girlfriend. And then you never hear it again, and then you listen to the whole thing, and you're like, why was there not more of this?
Yeah. It's so funny, though. You check, you know, because I listened to this on YouTube, I checked the comments on it and was like, and went back to see what other people were saying about it. And on Winds Over Neo Tokyo, people were like, wow, this even sounds like Blade Runner. And I was like, oh, wait till you get to Tetsuo. Like, this thing just starts to not sound like anything else that has ever been made before it.
Yeah.
And very few things that have been made since.
Yes. Shall we proclaim our winners?
Get to the hard part?
The hard part? Is the winner's the hard part?
Is the winner's the hard part?
I meant holistically.
I guess
the whole
so.
End bit.
I guess so. Well, my winner this week goes to, not surprisingly, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. Cool. As I said before, I really didn't have anything negative to say about this. The score, I think, is excellent. The soundtrack, also excellent. I have no qualms.
Hmm. Robbie?
Oh. My winner this week, I don't know if it's evident. It's Acura. It's so good. It may be the best piece of music I've listened to in a long time. I love it. It makes me want to watch the movie a million more times. And honestly, because of that, I think that altogether, for a score to be able to make me, you know, want to watch the movie instead of, you know, the other way around, being like, I should listen to the score more because I like it during the movie. I think that's a merit for it. And
My winner is also going to be Akira. Just because, like, it is so layered and there's so much to it. And, like there was nothing like it when it came out. And there also kind of, like, hasn't been anything like it since. And he said people compared it to Blade Runner, which is, like, a huge disservice to both Akira and Blade Runner. Because, they both have their own very, very different styles and aesthetics. Blade Runner's also got a really good soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and then just Akira's just, like, gets you up. Like,
yeah, to take Winds Over Neo Tokyo and say, oh, the whole soundtrack sounds like Blade Runner.
Yeah, it's like, no. It's just like how it is just so different. There's so much going on and just, yeah, it blows my mind.
All right. We cannot have a winner without also a loser. Did we haven't really decided what our, because they're not being kicked out of the castle this season.
We haven't said anything about it.
What are they doing this season?
They're being sent down the stairs in a bathtub, Paddington style.
Oh, okay. Well, this week,
okay,
I'm sending down the stairs.
This is a casual abbreviated season.
So the bride just got shot down the stairs in a bathtub full of blood?
Yes.
No. It's still just water.
It's a water, and then you get, like, the DVD, and you just throw it in the tub and then push the tub. Or if you prefer, you get the film stock, like you get the reel of the film,
so
throw it in the water, so it's ruined. Push it down the stairs.
Okay, poor.
Whatever
poor
you
guy.
Whatever you would prefer. Anywho,
okay, got it.
This week I'm saying goodbye to one of my very favorite films, Bull Durham. I love the movie. I think we kind of discussed it a bit, that it was batting with a handicap, and we, as we said before, that's kind of luck of the draw sometimes. It's sometimes not every movie is 100% in every category, and that's why we have this competition. So this week, I'm saying farewell to Bull Durham, though I do love the movie, and I do love the soundtrack.
This week, it's not going to be unanimous because I am choosing something different, despite, you know, understanding that Bull Durham bats with a handicap.
I wonder what he'll pick.
It's Jurassic Park.
I'm shocked.
I don't do this during your picks.
I know.
But no, it's Jurassic Park. I could, like I said, it may have just been this time listening to it through it, but I just couldn't get over the reuse. I wasn't as excited by the things that weren't the three motifs, like, and for there to be, you know, a total of a minute, really, of music that I totally enjoy and get excited for in this, in a movie, it, you know, like I said, like, it could totally be this time, but I just think, in general, there's maybe a minute of music that I really, really like in that movie, whereas there's multiple songs on the track list of Bull Durham, and that's why I had to pick Jurassic Park over Bull Durham.
Well, my pick is going to be for Bull Durham, because just... I didn't quite know how to talk about it, and just a lot of it, I was kind of like, these are 80s songs, I don't see where all these fit into the movie, and I kind of like came away from being like, oh, some of those were good songs. They don't make me want to watch the movie, but I would like to listen to those songs some more, and I felt like ultimately that kind of, because you said like the Akira soundtrack makes you want to listen to the movie, and it's kind of... something kind of like that, where it's like, it doesn't make me want to watch the movie, it makes me want to just find the songs on their own, mm-hmm. and not because they're from Bull Durham, but because it's just a good song. And, yeah, makes me sad, but I have to vote for Bull Durham.
Yeah. That's cool.
Like I said, it's film reel. Got put in a bathtub. In a
bathtub.
If only it was nitrate film, they could light it on fire. Then throw it in the bathtub. Still on fire because nitrate film burned in water.
It's thrown in a bathtub, and then Kevin Costner and Susan Sarandon have sex in that bathtub.
Oh.
As it is thrown down the stairs.
Wow.
Didn't they have sex in a bathtub in that movie?
No.
No, I don't think so. They fall out of bed.
No, they had sex in a bathtub.
Do they have sex in a bathtub?
Yeah, because then the camera pans over to some candles. You see the water... oh, start sloshing out more and more while you're listening to 60 Minute Man.
That's true. Was that them, though?
Yes. Because it was during their big sex montage. I've seen this movie once. Have you guys even seen Bull
Durham? To be fair, I really half watched it while making our announcement videos 3 weeks ago. So
I full on watched it and I didn't remember that, which may or may not speak to the memorability of the film. But I do love it.
It's a great film.
Regardless, it's out of the competition now, yes. So we'll wipe it from our minds. Never to be watched again.
That is okay. Not true.
That's how I've been treating every movie we voted off so far.
Oh no.
Have y'all not been doing that?
No.
Carter, The Princess Bride even?
Oh yes, it's gone. Never to watch it again.
What a sad life. We should stop the podcast because I feel
just
like...
just wait, and if we ever do a Star Wars movie.
And anyway, Carter...
when Carter does, when we do all the Star Treks, and Carter just, you know...
stops watching them.
Fades from existence.
It's fine.
Carter, you want to...
anywho, yes, you can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like spill something yard and add an S. I like to tweet sometimes, though I haven't tweeted in a while.
You retweeted some stuff
today. I retweeted some stuff today. It was pretty funny. Anywho, my recommendation this week goes to David Lean's 1957 classic film, The Bridge on the River Kwai. An excellent, excellent movie about some POWs in Japan. It stars perhaps my favorite performance from Alec Guinness. You know, pre-Obi-Wan. It's stupendous. It's about 3 hours long, and there's a point in the movie when you'll go, my God, why am I still watching this movie? And then you get to the end and you go, oh, that's why. And it's all worth it at the very end. So if you ever sit down to watch it, please stick through to the end because it makes the whole movie worth it. And I absolutely love it.
Cool. It's a very good movie. I do very much like The Bridge on the River Kwai. You find me on Snapchat and Twitter at Brett JHNSN number one. You guys okay over there?
You just totally swapped the order.
Anyway, because you were looking at me.
Oh, but, I was seeing if you were finished, but it's okay.
Oh, well, sorry. But yeah, you find me there. I post movie reviews. They're very simple. If you want me to review a movie, let me know. If you want to know more about my reviews and why I review them the way that I do, send me a message. We'll talk about it. My recommendation this week is going to be for the old war film, The Dirty Dozen.
Ooh.
It's about these convicts that are sent on ultimately a suicide mission, and if they get killed, government doesn't have to acknowledge it at all, and it's really good. If you like Mission Impossible movies, if you like Suicide Squad, since I know some people like Suicide Squad, then you'll probably like The Dirty Dozen.
Fair enough. Wait, people like Suicide Squad?
Yes.
People like The Dirty Dozen?
People watched Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad.
That movie made an obscene amount of money.
Fun fact.
Keeps me up at night.
I saw Suicide Squad twice because I watched the first time and thought, that was not very good. Perhaps if I watch it again, it'll emphasize the parts I liked. I watched it a second time. Fun fact, it did not.
Did it do the opposite?
It did the opposite. I went, ah, these were all of the parts of the movie I hate, and now I can't not see them. And so I have not watched the movie since, and I don't plan to for the remainder of my existence.
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Robbie_DShazer. I post stuff. I do lots of cool stuff. I try to talk about it, you know. If you're a Disney Parks fan, I posted several top five lists of different rides and attractions at different parks while I was there. That was fun. But my recommendation for the week, Brett, would you mind correcting me if this has been recommended already?
Yeah, I got you.
1994 Stargate, directed by Melinda. Well, I'm going... Carter is looking so mad.
No, I wanted you to. That's why I was about to take it from you.
You were about to take it?
I decided not to.
Carter's so happy that I finally watched Stargate.
I am.
I watched it on my phone, and now I want to watch it again. It's so good. Watch Stargate.
It's very good.
It spawned 18 seasons of television and a web series. And, I mean, you don't have to watch all of that. But you should spend the 2 hours of your life watching James Spader and Kurt Russell... kick-ass.
Very, very good. In
an Egyptian-inspired sci-fi fantasy. It's so...
Yes.
So much fun. There's a lot to learn about communication in there. There's just so much.
And large military weaponry.
Yes. And if you... Okay. Let me just put it this way. If you like Indiana Jones...
And Atlantis.
And Atlantis the Lost Empire... You should have watched Star Trek.
Kind of Independence Day.
Kind of Independence Day. It definitely...
You definitely feel the DNA.
Yeah.
Because this was either made right before or right after.
Right before. It primed Roland Emmerich
for... You definitely feel the DNA of Independence Day.
Watch Stargate. If you like those things, watch Stargate. Why haven't you done it already?
And then watch Stargate SG-1, all 10 seasons of it. And then Stargate Atlantis, all 5 seasons of that. You don't have to watch Stargate Universe. It's not that great.
But yeah.
There's
we're going to go do that more. After
we're actually
stop
going
recording.
To watch this as soon as we're done. So
I'm glad it hadn't been recommended yet because it's all I've been able to think about other than film soundtracks for the last couple days since I finished it. But that's been this episode of Film Fracas. Join us again next week when our final 3 films take on each other in another probably new challenge.
Hopefully. I have one in mind.
You have one in mind? Great. And then, 1 week later, our final episode.
Final fracas.
Of season 3.
Yes. We may or may not have a guest. We'll see.
We'll probably have a guest. We talked to them today.
Yes. Oh.
Who could they be?
Who could they
Stay
be?
Stay tuned.
Who could they
in
be
in at least 2 weeks.
Now? And then,
Yes. Buy our merch.
Yes. Buy our merch. It's changing soon. We're getting a new host.
We'll get a new host, so we'll get a new logo very soon.
Get your vintage, your quickly becoming vintage.
Your vintage film fracas. I'm sure my mother will have to buy one of everything with the new logo on it. That way we can at least get another hour of studio time.
But hey,
we'll see.
Fun stuff, fun stuff. And also, so just to lay out our schedule for the next couple weeks. Final three, final fracas, a bonus episode where we will introduce our brand new host.
Yes.
And we'll maybe do some fun stuff on Twitter leading up to their announcement. And then season four.
Yep.
We're excited.
Yes.
Three films left.
Yes.
Film Fracas.
It's going to be big.
Filmfracas.com. At Film Fracas on Twitter. At Film Fracas on Instagram.
Do we have filmfracas.com?
Yeah, we do have Film Fracas.
Yeah. I thought so.
We do have Film Fracas.
You can listen to Film Fracas there.
I'm glad. I was like 99% sure.
Yeah, it's the one I tweet it because it's the easiest. There's a link to like literally the RSS feed, and you can put that in any
also,
player you listen to.
Keep your head to the ground. We will have some new content out, possibly some new shows.
Maybe.
We're developing quite a bit. I'm sure at least one thing will get at least one episode out.
We've been talking about new content for a while now.
But hey.
It's coming.
Filmfracas.com. If you are a business, give us sponsorship deals.
Also, Keanu Reeves, Moby, and Beck. The invitation is formally extended to all three of you. Feel free to come at your leisure. We'll always make time.
And on that note, thank you guys so much for listening. As always, we will see you guys next week. Stay tuned. Bye-bye. Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there's a lot of shows on the web, and we're so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thank you to Robbie, the main man, DeShazer, and Carter, the whole effing show, Spilliards, for writing and producing each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @FilmFracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Thank you.